and welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian DeNovellis, and March Madness is here for four teams in the Tri-State. We got four in. Really thought we were going to get Seton Hall and St. John's. I will not get over that one anytime soon. I still don't get why the Mountain West got six teams. And the Big East, the second rated conference in the country, got three. Okay. I don't want to hear about non-conference wins. I don't want to hear about the fact that Donovan Klingon got injured in the second half against Seton Hall. I don't want to hear about, you know, quad ones. Look at the eye test. Look at the numbers, okay? St. John's, you cannot tell me that they are not one of the hottest teams in the country. Look at what they've done in their last 10 games. Nobody would want to play them in the tournament. No way. If St. John's was a 10 seed, they would have 7 seeds shaking in their boots. If they were an 11 seed, okay, no 6 seed would have wanted to play them. The second best conference in the country got three teams. The ACC got four. The Mountain West got six. Look at Seton Hall. 13 wins in the second toughest conference in the country, with wins over UConn and Marquette, two of the top six teams in the country. Six games over 500 in the conference. No team in the history of the Big East has been five plus games over 500 and not made the NCAA tournament. There are teams all over the country with 13 wins in their conference. And there's one team, one of those teams with 13 wins that is not in the NCAA tournament, Seton Hall.
Oh, but they had four wins against DePaul and Georgetown.
Okay, they're still 9-7. They're still two games over 500. Okay, because I could take any ragtag teams at the bottom of any conference that are horrendous. We could take Louisville in the ACC. We could take Michigan in the Big Ten. All right, there are any number of teams that no conference is without those teams. Okay, when you're six games over 500, when you win 13 games in your league, all right, when you play as hard and as tough as St. John's has done and winning games down the stretch, whatever happened to, you know, wins over top 25 opponents? Whatever happened to what's their record in their last 10? It's what the NCAA tournament committee chose to do to fit their narrative, whatever metric they could pick to pick out a team, okay? Because you can't tell me that Virginia or Michigan State had more quad one wins than Seton Hall. The numbers don't lie. Seton Hall, five quad one wins. St. John's, four quad one wins. Virginia, two. They play in the ACC, and they have two quad one wins. This is the metric used by the NCAA tournament committee. Seton Hall had five quad one wins and a KenPom of 62. Virginia, two quad one wins, a KenPom of 69. But yet they're going to pick on Seton Hall's non-conference resume. Did you see that horrendous performance, that embarrassment? The embarrassing performance by Virginia against Colorado State. How's Charles McClellan feeling now about his Virginia Cavaliers, that they lost 67-43 to Colorado State? They scored 43 points in a college basketball game. Worse yet, they had 14 in the first half. They were shooting air balls at the free throw line. They were shooting air balls from the wing. How many times are we going to see this team get into the NCAA tournament and lose in the first round? There is no doubt in anyone else's mind outside of the state of Virginia and outside of the NCAA tournament committee that Virginia did not belong in that tournament. You don't even need two eyes to see that. We don't need an eye test. We know. Well, there's nothing we can do about it now, right? But sit here and talk about it on a podcast or complain about it on Twitter. At some point, we have to move on. But this Virginia team, this is an all-timer. This has to be right at the top of teams that should not have gotten a bid to the NCAA tournament. 43 points in a college basketball game. An embarrassment. No way can anyone ever change my mind. All right? That's all I'll say about that. Had to get it off my chest. I want to talk about not March sadness, March madness. All right? We've got UConn. We've got Wagner, St. Peter's, and Yale. All won their conference tournaments. UConn, the number one overall seed in the tournament, trying to repeat as national champions for the first time since Florida did it in 06 and 07. How about Yale winning at the buzzer beater? All right, lots to talk about. I want to get to our tri-state teams in a bit. First, I want to thank our sponsor, of course, the North Jersey Vipers Softball Club. Softball's in full swing. They are in their 14th season. The North Jersey Vipers, one of the premier softball clubs in all of New Jersey. They get players to the next level. They currently have 21 alumni playing NCAA softball. Get in touch with Bob Germano, the owner and manager of the club, NorthJerseyVipers.com. All right. It is my pleasure to welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast one of the preeminent voices in all of sports broadcasting. He calls NFL games on CBS and Westwood One Radio. He's been the play-by-play announcer for the Nets for 30 years. And this year, he's been named the lead play-by-play announcer for CBS's coverage of the NCAA tournament, along with the governor, Bill Raftery, and Grant Hill, Ian Eagle. Ian, it is so great to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
Oh, Brian, always great to talk to you. You know, this time of year gets the juices flowing, and I just can't imagine the storylines that are going to pop up, because every year it happens. It's clockwork. We're going to find out about a program that we weren't that familiar with, players that we didn't really know much about. There are just so many narratives and great juicy stories that are born in March, and I'm ready for it.
You've called so many big games for the Nets and NFL playoffs, NFL regular seasons. What does it mean to you now to be the lead play-by-play college voice of the NCAA tournament, taking over for a legend like Jim Nance?
Yeah, I think you hit on it. That's the first part, that Jim did this job and did it so well for 33 years. And the way that I've viewed it is I'm succeeding him. I'm not replacing him. There's no replacing Jim, but I'm going to do it my way. I've been doing the tournament since 1998. The big difference this year is that there's an extra weekend that I'm working. It happens to be the Final Four in the championship, so there is some finality to the big dance that I've only experienced once before. I did the World Feed years ago. It just happened to be one of the greatest games in college basketball history, the Duke-Butler championship game, where Hayward had a chance to win it with a half-court heave in Indianapolis. And there are people somewhere in the Philippines that still remember my call. This time, it'll be broadcast throughout the United States and North America. I think what I've reminded myself of, Brian, is don't change anything. Don't try to be something that you're not. I've literally done thousands of basketball games in my career. I do about 100 a year between NBA and college hoops. And that's a big part of my approach, is getting a lot of reps and feeling that flow and rhythm of doing play-by-play and carrying that with me to the Final Four to the championship game. So that's the way I'm viewing it. My energy and my preparation is always something I pride myself on. That's not going to change. The only thing that changes is the stage and the people that I'm working with. You mentioned Raph, Grant Hill, Tracy Wolfson. These are people that I'm very close with already from a friendship point of view. I've worked with in different capacities, Bill individually on NBA games, college games, Grant individually on NBA and college games, Tracy on a variety of events. And now we get to do it as a group and as a team. So beyond excited.
This is not me kissing up to you, but I have said for years you're my favorite play-by-play guy, and I think you hit it on the head. It's kind of like when I listen to you broadcast a game, it's like you're sitting at a bar with your buddy and you're just talking about it. You're not taking over the game, you're not bigger than the game, but yet you know how to insert your humor in there just enough to let us know, and let us laugh a little bit. So I really compliment you on that, and
Well,
I'm looking forward to this.
I really appreciate that, Brian. That's probably the best compliment that you could possibly give a fellow broadcaster. So it means a lot. And I do find it a bit intriguing that you would mention a bar and the fact I'm working with Bill Raftery. There is some connective tissue there, whether
There
you
was a
know it or not.
reason, and believe me, there was a reason why I set you up like that. Hey, Bill, he's a legend, right? I mean, Bill Raftery has coined phrases, send it in Jerome and man to man and onions, and you've got one too, right, Ian? I mean, wedgie. So one of the great calls ever, who out of nowhere. Can you
Ironically,
explain where that came from?
it was Bill I was working with the first time it happened in an NBA game. It's funny, him and Jim Sponarkle had the same saying. Obviously, I've done literally hundreds of games with Jimmy as well, and great partner and terrific at what he does. And we have a really close relationship off the air, on the air. But the two of them would always say neck ball if the ball got wedged. And it was basically a Spanarkle family tradition that if you had a neck ball in the backyard at the playground, game was over, you win. That's it, guaranteed.
Okay.
So that was a Spanarkle rule. Him and Raph would say it. And one time I was doing a game, this is way back when, 90s, late 90s. And I just thought, no, the ball's getting wedged.
Yeah.
And wedge became wedgie, which obviously is a funny word, brings up different visuals and connotations. But the first time I used it, Raph laughed like a hyena. And when you can get Bill to laugh in that way, you know you've hit on something. So I started using it if it popped up on other games that I was doing. And then as the games got bigger and the broadcast got bigger and the stakes were maybe higher, I stuck with it. And then I found that people would react in different ways. Now it's become a little bit more part of the nomenclature, so it's not as big a shock
Yeah. Other
when it
people
pops
are
up.
saying it, Ian.
Yeah.
So that's
Yeah.
a compliment there,
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I've only had one actual wedgie in my life. And Brian, sadly, I can remember the exact day and moment that it happened. It was February 9th, 1995, my birthday, on a flight home from Atlanta. The Nets had just lost to the Hawks. And Rick Mahorn was walking up the aisle of the Nets team plane. And I made a comment to Mike O'Korn that I thought only Mike could hear, but Rick could hear it as well. And the basic comment was that you realize that one of Rick's cheeks is twice the size of my entire ass. And Mike laughed, and Mahorn turns around and goes, "What'd you say, Birdman?" I said, "What's that?" He said, "What'd you say, Birdman?" And I said, "Oh, I said, you're twice the human being I am, Rick." He said, "No, you didn't, Birdman." He says, "Stand up, Birdman." So I stand up. I have no idea what's going to occur.
Oh,
And he gives me a wedgie on the Nets team charter. I did not anticipate it. I was not prepared for it. It was not atomic in any way, but it was a wedgie. And it's the only time that I've experienced in my life. And every time the ball gets stuck on the rim,
Yes.
wedged, I think of Rick Mahorn.
And I will too. I mean, thank you. I am thank
Thanks.
you. A mile high wedgie. There you go. From Rick Mahorn. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, listen, wedgies aside, you have quite a first round, second round in Brooklyn. I mean, that's why they put you on these games, right? You're going to get the big matchups: UConn, Duke, Wisconsin, Florida Atlantic. I mean, James Madison, a 30-win team. You've got some teams in that region. How excited are you about these games?
Yeah, really excited for the games, really excited for the storylines. And if you start right out of the gate, Northwestern, Florida Atlantic, to me, that's a pick'em game right at the top of the day on Friday in Brooklyn. Northwestern had a terrific season. Chris Collins has done outstanding work. They're now a legitimate program again, which is a huge statement for a school that was consistently at the bottom half of the Big Ten. What Chris has brought has been consistency. He's recruited well. He's developed well. Boo Booey is a name. If you don't know him yet,
Oh
there's
yeah.
a chance you may know him
Oh
in
yeah.
March. Gifted scorer from Albany, a 50-year guy, and has gotten better every year. And turned himself into a first-team all Big Ten performer. 19 points per game, does a little bit of everything. He's fearless. They've got a player in Brooks Barnhizer who also does a little bit of everything, fundamentally sound, tough, inside-outside skills. Ryan Langborg, who I had last year when Princeton made its run to the Sweet 16. That's something also that you've realized, Brian, doing this tournament year in and year out. Different players pop up in different places every year. So you start doing your prep and you're like, wait, I had him somewhere else. And obviously it hit me with Langborg. And the Florida Atlantic story is really interesting because they snuck up on everybody last year, had the Cinderella mentality. They're no longer a dark horse. In fact, they're the higher seed against a Big Ten team in the 8-9 game. And the same cast of characters that went to the Final Four last year is the basic group that Dusty May has again. So it's Jahnel Davis now in a starting role, and Elijah Martin, and Vladislav Golden. These are names that we got to know a year ago, and they're not sneaking up on anybody anymore. So right out of the gate, I just think we have a really fun, interesting matchup that to me typifies what the tournament is all about. You get a team from the Big Ten, even though they're not the biggest team from the Big Ten, and then a team from the new look American Athletic, but that has more experience than the team from the Big Ten in the big dance. Well, out of the gate, you've got something really intriguing, and hopefully that's going to set the tone for a great day.
Yeah, I think it will. Those 8-9 games are always a coin flip. Let's turn our attention to UConn. They're in our tri-state coverage area here with the podcast and a team that, we cover weekly. And they are the favorites. Okay. They are the number one overall seed. As you know, you saw them a couple of weeks ago against my Seton Hall team that they just absolutely were clicking on all cylinders. What impresses you the most about this UConn team?
Well, they check every box more than anything else. So when you look at college basketball teams, you try to figure out, okay, where's the weakness? Where can you take advantage? There is no weakness with UConn. You want to play up and down? They're willing. You want to go in the half court? They've got a big man that can dominate. You want to make it a physical game? They're okay with that. They've got the people that can do it. They have versatile pieces. And right now they have a head coach, to me, in Dan Hurley, that's completely locked in. Still, Seton Hall connections, and there'll always be a soft spot, I'm sure, for any Seton Hall fan for Dan and what he's accomplished in his career. He is a high-level head coach. He gets what his team needs. He motivates. I think he has become more balanced in his approach and probably has more empathy than he's ever had before, just based on his own personal experiences. And then talent development and recognizing and identifying talent. Tristan Newton. Anybody could have had this guy. He came from East Carolina. They got him, and they've turned him into a triple-double machine. Cam Spencer has fit exactly what it is they need. So I think they're stacked. The issue, if you're a UConn fan, is not necessarily the first weekend, but it's if everything goes according to form, which it rarely does. I do think they didn't get any favors from the committee.
They're the number one seed, the number one overall seed, and they are in a stacked,
Yes.
stacked bracket. Wow, in the East.
Yeah, to me, Iowa State's the best number two seed. Illinois is a legitimate number three seed. I just saw them this past weekend in the Big Ten tournament. They have a chance because they've got a prolific scorer in Shannon, and they've got experience in Damask. They have Hawkins, who has that inside-outside ability. They have a chance to be a Final Four team. When you watch them play and the fact that they are so high-powered offensively, they could put 95 points on the board. If you can put 95 points on the board, that means you have a pretty good chance of advancing in the NCAA tournament. And then Auburn. Auburn's really good and battle-tested. I thought of the four number one seeds, UConn, from the Sweet 16 on, again, on paper, and Brian, we know these championships are not won on paper, may have the toughest road. But what's interesting when you start doing your homework and you go back, and I remembered this from last year, but I didn't quite remember what the exact path was. Here are the teams they beat last year, Brian, to win the championship. They beat Iona, St. Mary's, Arkansas, Gonzaga, Miami, San Diego State, title. So we do have to acknowledge that just how everything shook out last year. Not to say UConn had an easy road. Nothing's an easy road. You're playing good teams. You're playing good programs. But nobody on that list is going to blow you away. Gonzaga was not one of their top years, in my particular opinion. Nobody's going to blow you away with their resume from a year ago. And UConn took care of business, and nobody puts an asterisk next to the national championship. You just say, oh, yeah, they dominated. They were the best team in the field. They looked like the best team. They played like the best team. And then they were crowned as the best team.
Double digits in all those wins, and I've been saying it, for a good 2 months, 2.5 months. I think this team is better than last year's team. I think they are more balanced. They are deeper. Stephon Castle is somebody who we were figuring it out. Oh, how is he going to fit into this team in December? Now we know how he fits in. All right, he is a superstar who's just, playing his role, which is rare in this day and age. So now they have to finish the job and try to become the first team since Duke, since Florida, excuse me, to go back to back. In your opinion, all right, I know you're not in the prediction business, but if you had to pick one team, is there one team that you would pick to win it all?
I think they're the best team. They're certainly the best team I saw in person. And I saw Houston and was really impressed by them, and saw Kentucky and saw Tennessee. And last week saw Illinois. And I can go through the season, some of the excellent teams that I've seen. They are pound for pound the best team. And I think everything you just laid out is correct. But just because you're better than the team that won the national championship last year doesn't guarantee you the national championship this year. It's the road that you have to take. It's the matchups you have to deal with. It's how much you have to exert in some of these games. So if they have a huge battle in the Sweet 16 that takes a lot out of them, and the team that they're playing in the Elite Eight got to breeze through their Sweet 16 matchup, that plays a role. That is something, and obviously injuries and foul trouble and all the things that are a part of college basketball. But you hit on something that is really important when I'm calling games, when I'm watching games. When you have individual talents that stand out in a manner that the player looks unique and different than everybody else, Stephon Castle, to me, in the game that I worked against Seton Hall, the dismantling of the Pirates in that game and Stores, he looked different to me. That's a player that you stop and say, oh, wait, that's a difference maker. You get into March and the teeth of the tournament, a player like that can win you a game. And we saw it last year. Jordan Hawkins, who's now in the NBA, look different than other guys, and Andre Jackson. Say it's that level of talent that can separate you.
Ian, when he's the fifth option on that team, that's scary. Okay, that is scary. So, Ian, last question, and thank you for coming on. In your pod in Brooklyn, do you have one potential upset winner in your first or second round games? Let's go in the first round, right? Wisconsin, James Madison, Duke, Vermont, UConn, Stetson, Florida Atlantic, Northwestern. Do you see a potential upset there?
You know, I think the game everybody that's followed this has keyed in on is that James Madison, Wisconsin game. And it has to do with the mentality of winning. They are used to winning. I don't care what conference you're in, you go 31-3 on the season. Yeah. Similar to UConn, they have three losses. And obviously, they're playing high-level competition. There's an X on their back every single game that they take the floor. James Madison, this is a different type of storyline, but they have a confidence that you need in order to potentially pull off an upset in the big dance. Mark Byington is their head coach. He has really turned the program around. This has been a renaissance in many ways for the school itself. The football team is up. Their other sports are doing well. They made the move to the Sun Belt, and it's been a great fit for them. You know, some names just to keep in the back of your mind for some of your listeners that just aren't familiar with them. Terrence Edwards Jr., he's just a versatile dude. Yeah. He's one of those guys that can make it look effortless at times. TJ Bickerstaff, the last name you know. It's Bernie. The grandson of Bernie Bickerstaff, longtime NBA coach, the nephew of JB Bickerstaff, the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, transfer from BC. Before that, he was at Drexel. He's a lefty. That's where you can make a difference. He's 6'9". 230 pounds. He's a legitimate big. Yeah. So now when you're playing against a team like Wisconsin, you can match up physically. His backup is Jalen Carey. You may know the last name because his brother is Vernon Carey, who played at Duke. His father was an offensive lineman with the Miami Dolphins for 8 years in the NFL, Vernon Carey. So yes, the assumption is, well, it's James Madison. Who are they going to have? They can play. And I really think they are going to give Wisconsin a battle. Wisconsin's good. They're playing good ball.
Yeah.
This past weekend, Brian, it all came together for them. They nearly pulled it off, lost to Illinois in the Big Ten championship, beat Purdue in a thriller overtime game in the semifinal. And they're playing their best ball at the right time. But they're not world beaters. And physically, James Madison can match up. So it's our final game of the day, which is always a great debate within broadcast circles of if you could pick your order, what would you want it to be? And often you want your first game to be really good, And you want your last game to be really good because you're calling your fourth game in the day. You want to maintain your energy. If the game is really good, it can carry you. It can carry your crew. You know, each game is 2 hours and 10 minutes. So you multiply that by four. You're looking at about 9 hours of television coverage from each site.
Yeah.
And the final 2 hours can be a bit of a slog if you get your 116 matchup and it's a 30-point game. I've had every iteration in my 26 years of doing the event. The best case scenario is that setup. Great first game, great last game, and then you go into the moonlight feeling good about the day.
Love it. Ian, you are in mid-tournament form right now. You're ready for the final four with those notes, I think. I think we covered it all. A to Z, onions to wedgies. We got it all. In there, Glenn.
Get the puppy set, Brian.
And there it is. The great Ian Eagle. Thanks for coming on the podcast. And we'll be watching the games. Take care.
You got it, bud. Really appreciate it, man.
All right. There he is. I will never get the vision of Ian Eagle being given an atomic wedgie by Rick Mahorn. If you don't know who Rick Mahorn is, he's one of the biggest human beings ever. 6'9", 6'10", easily 280 pounds or more. Probably played over 300 pounds in his later years. I mean, I don't know how his underwear wasn't just shredded. My goodness. He probably still has the sores. All right, I can't even think about it, all right? Oh, that's hilarious. Ian's the best, all right? He's my guy. And he is a guy, when I sit down and I watch a game, football, basketball, and I know Ian's on the call, I am going to enjoy it, all right? And I'm not big on, oh, who's broadcasting the game? I just know I'm there to watch the game, but Ian entertains me and makes me laugh. So congratulations to him. Thanks for coming on, taking time out of his busy schedule. All right, let's talk a little Wagner, because they are the first team to advance in the Tri-State. How about Wagner winning their first four matchup against Howard? If you didn't see the game, or if you did, little recap here. Howard was down early in this game. Wagner just took control. All right, they established offensively, defensively, what they were doing. Howard was held to like 28% field goal percentage in the first half. Wagner was hitting everything. They led 38-27 at the half. Melvin Council Jr. was a man. He was a beast. All right. We all knew in the NEC, first team all NEC. We've known what type of a player he is. Well, now Howard knows, and the national fans know. All right. Big first half out of him. Wagner built a 17-point lead in this game, and I thought it was over. I really did. I didn't see Howard coming back in this game, and lo and behold, Wagner got sloppy with the ball. Howard started hitting some threes, some turnovers late in this game. They started full-court pressing, and the next thing you know, Howard cuts it to three with a minute to go. They call timeout. Wagner gets the ball back, and they get the ball to Council. Shot clock's winding down, and he's forced into a bad shot. Good defense by Howard. They get the ball down three. They get a layup. They cut it to one. So now there's about 16 seconds to go. Wagner has to inbound the ball, and they're going to get fouled. But first, they have to inbound the ball and not turn it over. That's exactly what happened. They get fouled. And now they're up one with 8 seconds to go, and got to make your free throws, right? Got to make your free throws. Julian Brown goes to the line, pressure situation, 14 seconds, we're on the clock, makes them both. Then Howard comes down. They have a timeout. They're down three. Personally, I would foul in this situation. All right. I wait until there's about, you know, 6 seconds left, 5 seconds left. But Howard gets a good look from three. Wagner elects not to foul. The shot goes up. They miss it. Offensive rebound. Kick it out for another three. That misses. Offensive rebound. 3 seconds left. Another three at the buzzer. I thought it looked good. It goes out. Wagner gets the rebound. They hold on for dear life. And Wagner wins their first NCAA tournament game ever. All right? You can't take that away from them. Play-in game, first four, whatever you want to call it, they won in just their second trip ever to the big dance. Donald Copeland did it. Toughness is his mantra. Toughness. Jersey City, gritty. They were doing it all with defense, and then they had to hang on fittingly with one final defensive stance. Hold on for dear life. Hold their breath. They win. And now they get North Carolina in the second round. So congratulations to Wagner. Melvin Council Jr., brilliant game. 21 points, 7 assists. Brown ended up with 15 points. I mean, Wagner, Northeast Conference, NCAA tournament. Don't take this conference lightly. Last year, it was FDU winning a first four and then shocking the world with the greatest tournament upset ever, knocking off Purdue. And now Wagner gets a chance to do the same against a heavily favored North Carolina team. Wouldn't that be something? Donald Copeland, look, I think they're going to keep it close. I don't know how they're going to do it again with 7 players, but I think Wagner has a fighting chance. Why not? So congrats to Wagner. Meanwhile, we already talked about UConn with Ian, so I don't really want to touch upon them other than saying I am picking them to win it all. I've been saying it for weeks. I know I'm not going out on a limb here. I want to see history made. I will take UConn. You can have the field. They will become the first team since Florida to win back-to-back NCAA tournament titles. Before them, it was Duke in 91 and 92, so it doesn't happen often. I'm really rooting for it to happen this year. All right? Let's talk a little St. Peter's and then Yale. St. Peter's, everyone's darling from 2 years ago. Well, everything's changed. Their coach has changed. All the players except Latrell Reed are gone, but the name remains the same. The Peacock brand, the toughness, the Jersey City, never say die, don't count us out mentality. Well, it was Kentucky 2 years ago. Now it's another team from the Southeast Conference. Tennessee, a team that's year in and year out. If I were betting, I would take St. Peter's and the money line, and I would take St. Peter's and the points. All right? Go for it. What do you have to lose? I know Tennessee is loaded. I know they have a first-team All-American in Dalton Connect. Their backcourt is really, really good with Zakai Ziegler as well. All right? But you know what? Latrell Reed is a veteran. Nothing phases him. Nothing phases this St. Peter's team. It's all about guard play in the NCAA tournament and seniors. St. Peter's has it. All right? They're going to be oversized. They're going to be undersized, I should say, in this game. There's going to be more talent with Tennessee, but you're not going to find more heart than St. Peter's and intangibles. All right? It's David versus Goliath. If this game is close at the 8-minute mark, heck, if this game is close at halftime, Tennessee is going to be feeling it, okay? But if St. Peter's is within 6 points with 8 minutes to go, 8 points, under 10, it's a ball game, all right? They're going to play. They're going to try to dictate tempo. They're going to try to slow the game down. They're going to defend you and try to keep you in this game and drag you down as much as possible. Jersey City, toughness. Bashir Mason has been living for this moment. All right. Like Donald Copeland, he knows how to touch. He knows how to coach. He knows how to get his team ready. I can't wait for this game. Tennessee is a team that more often than not disappoints. They have Final Four potential every single year. They're supposed to win. They should win. But I just think there's something about St. Peter's, something about March, this time of year, no matter who the players are, I wouldn't bet against St. Peter's. Last but not least, Yale barely squeaked by, but they got by Brown in a game that they were down six with less than 30 seconds to play. They won it on a buzzer-beating floater from like 3 feet out by Matt Noling. Otherwise, Brown would have gone in. Yale's there for the third time in 4 years. I like their guards. I love John Pulakidas and August Mahoney. These guys know how to shoot. Very good three-point shooters. They have one of the best centers, the best center in the Ivy League. Sophomore Danny Wolf, seven-footer. Look, they have a great coach in James Jones. They're not going to be fazed by this moment. The upperclassmen have been to the NCAA tournament before, so they're not going to be fazed. Another SEC team in Auburn that's, look, they're playing their best basketball under Bruce Pearl. They are the SEC tournament champs. They're very good offensively. They're very good defensively. They're on a six-game win streak. I mean, look, if Auburn was not in UConn's bracket, I would pick them as a Final Four contender. That's how good they are. Just like St. Peter's, I think Yale's going to keep the game close. I think they have shooters if they can hit some threes. Danny Wolf is going to be tested on the interior with Johnny Broome. All right, that's going to be a very interesting matchup. Don't be surprised if Wolf pulls Broome outside, right, and pulls him out to the three-point line. They're going to try to stretch you out. And if they can hit their threes, they very much have a chance to be in this game. All right, Yale won an NCAA tournament game back in 2016. The Ivies, you know what Princeton did last year? Going to the Sweet 16, all right? Can we have magic again? Look, we have four very good teams in this tri-state that are proven. They're tough. They're winning teams. They're winning programs. All four of them won their conference tournaments. They're not going to be fazed by any of this. I know it might not be Yale's best team, but look, they beat a very good Cornell team, and they beat a red-hot Brown team. So if anyone can have their team ready, it's James Jones. So, and they have one of the best perimeter defenders, the Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year in Bez Mbang. Okay? So we have Yale, we have St. Peter's, we have Wagner that's already advanced to face North Carolina, and we have the odds-on favorite, number one overall seed, UConn. March Madness, the tournament has arrived. Wagner kicked things off with a W. We'll see what happens from here. We'll be watching the games, and I know you'll be watching them as well. Before we go, I want to say also, thanks to the North Jersey Vipers Softball Club. Check them out at NorthJerseyVipers.com. And also, I want to take this time to tell you about my buddy Mike Supa at Ward White Sotheby's Realty down the Jersey Shore. If you're looking to list, buy, or sell a home in Monmouth or Ocean County, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. I like Mike. You'll like Mike too. And when you call him, tell him Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Enjoy the games, everyone. So long. Until next time, my name is Brian DeNovellis. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So long.